With securing a Champions League place by no means a certainty and a European campaign that ended in abject failure, Manchester United still have work to do to save their season. But an FA Cup quarter-final win against their old foes Liverpool on Sunday would be a massive boost. It might put a different spin on the campaign. But the question is, can they get that victory, or will Liverpool's final season under Jurgen Klopp just keep on going from strength to strength? I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is Football Only Better. My top tipping team keeps going from strength to strength, starting with Mark O'Hare. Mark, United managed to win against Everton last week, but they coughed up lots of chances, and it was another game where we went, they won, but they weren't very good.
Same old story, isn't it, really? I opposed Manchester United last weekend on the show. Thought they were really unappealing odds on favourites at home to Everton. And I think I said, even if it wasn't Everton, most other teams, I would be happy to oppose them at those kind of prices. And yeah, deeply unimpressive again. Both goals arriving in the first half through penalties. But they conceded 11 shots in the first half, which kind of goes to show the flow of the game. They certainly weren't in control of that match at all. And actually marked the fifth time in their last six Premier League games now that they have allowed their opposition at least 20 shots. Which
is bizarre. It's
disgraceful.
Odd.
It's bizarre, odd, but I'd say just disgraceful, almost unforgivable, really, that you can allow your opposition that amount of shots so consistently and still be somehow within reach of potentially a Champions League push. And, you know, incredibly now, only Luton and Sheffield United have faced more shots than Manchester United in the Premier League. It's shameful, really. And, you know, Ten Hag comes out and tries to put a positive spin on his team's performance. And
he's been borderline delusional in the last few weeks. Like, they lost to Fulham, he came out, went, oh no, that was a good performance, we're heading in the right direction. I think he's actually harming his own credibility by being so odd after games, like making out that everything's absolutely fine, United are going in the right direction, blah, blah, blah. It's just nonsense.
Yeah, I agree. Unfortunately, it just gives the fuel to the results only matter crew, who will say, well, United have now won five of the last seven in the league, so they actually are heading in the right direction. Whereas, you know, you watch with your eye test and you look at the numbers, it's anything but, really. And they're so far away in terms of performance levels to the teams above them, it's kind of laughable, really. And you know, you think back to the reverse game against Liverpool in the Premier League before Christmas, they somehow managed to survive that onslaught, conceded 34 shots and pinched a pointer out of that game. And we spoke, you know, at length, really, after that game, that whilst the actual defensive performance wasn't that bad and they did keep Liverpool largely away from the penalty area or major areas of concern, you can't concede 34 shots each week and expect to get results against a high caliber team like Liverpool. And, you know, if they concede 20 plus shots this weekend, they're not going to win that game. So in terms of Liverpool, yeah, I did not see Liverpool fielding that 11 against Man City. A defence that featured Kwanzaa and Bradley, two players playing in League One last season, Salah on the bench as well. But they're absolutely outstanding across the 90 minutes, especially.
Really? They should have had a penalty, should have won the game. Yeah,
I mean, City would say, well, we had opportunities too in that second half. But in terms of the flow of the game, I thought Endo and McAllister were absolutely superb in midfield. Diaz and Nunes, their energy up top, whilst they weren't so clinical, but I thought they put City under huge pressure. And you assume that the 11 will be stronger this weekend now with potentially Salah starting, Robertson as well coming back into the team. And, you know, you consider Liverpool were as short as 164 away at Old Trafford last season. They're close to 1.9 this time around. I know it's the FA Cup, but City were 161 at Old Trafford in late October. There's a decent difference there between those prices. And I think, you know, if Liverpool turn up and come close to last week's standards, there's only one winner here. So, you know, we've already seen Liverpool dominate United despite that draw at Anfield. So, I wouldn't put anyone off backing Liverpool to win. Slight odds on here. They've scored 26 more goals than Manchester United in the Premier League this season. If they bring the noise, that attack is very difficult to stop. But there are alternative plays which I wanted to highlight here, which I really wanted to get stuck into, really. And it goes back to the shots market. And just based off United's inability to sort of stem the flow of opposition shots. So I'm going to read you their last 10 matches across all comps, the opposition and the shots conceded. Everton 23, Man City 27, Forest 16, Fulham 17, Luton 22, Villa 23, West Ham 22, Wolves 16, Newport 17, Spurs 16. So that's 10 games, an average of 19.9 shots conceded. They've conceded at least 22 shots in half of those 10 fixtures. It's 6-5 on the Betfair Sportsbook for Liverpool to take 20 shots or more, and 7-2 for Liverpool take 24 shots or more. I think both of those bets are blinding, actually. I think Liverpool should, in theory, seize the opportunity and come out with a front foot display, which puts United to the sword and progress.
Did you say Newport 17?
Yep, and United fielded pretty much their best 11 available to them that day, away at Rodney
Absolutely.
Parade.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a structural issue, isn't it? There's no doubt about it. I mean, you look at that run of fixtures, that run of form, giving up that many shots has got to be a coaching issue. But apparently, everything's going really, really well. Sky Sports' Lewis Jones, part of the squad once again. He called Liverpool's draw with Manchester City absolutely correctly, as I recall. Didn't you say it would be a score draw, I seem to say? Seem to think, and they managed to get that, although it was desperately close to Liverpool winning the game. Lewis, these games are coming pretty thick and fast for Liverpool. But as we know, a clash with United in any competition is a quasi-religious event. So you cannot be playing a weakened team. So it has to be as strong a team as Klopp can possibly field for this.
Yeah, it'd be all guns blazing, won't it, for Liverpool, I think. And the fact that they've got a very healthy lead going into that second leg against Sparta Prague. We're recording on Thursday, so the game's tonight, isn't it? They're 5-1 up from the first leg, aren't they? So he should be able to rest and recuperate a lot of those players and get some minutes into Salah. So yeah, I think it's gonna be all guns blazing for Liverpool here. And I absolutely agree with Mark about that away win price, and brilliantly outlined the shots numbers there. Both those prices, both on my radar. And you mentioned what the problem is, and you say with Manchester United, and it could be a structural issue in the midfield. Completely and utterly agree. And I think it's based around the drop in levels of performances from Casemiro. And I wrote about this in my notebook column for Betfair this week. And I think there's some signs in the past, I don't know, maybe 10 games or so, that he might be gone at the game, I think, Casemiro. I thought it a few weeks back, actually, against Luton, where Ross Barkley and Carlton Morris ran rings around him. And he should have been actually sent off in that game in the first half. I think he made 4 fouls, and two of them were, the second one especially, was very borderline. He could have been sent off there, and he was hooked at half-time, and United actually improved after the break when he went off. And there's no doubt in his experience, is there? He's a huge asset to the dressing room, and brings a big threat from set pieces. He scored the winner, didn't he, in the last round against Nottingham Forest. But just modern-day football, and in the Premier League especially, it's just all about intensity, counter-pressing, speed, passing quickly for a press, and they're sort of the non-negotiables for a top-class midfielder these days. And Casemiro just does everything so slowly, and he's so far away from the levels that he's hit throughout his career. And I think he's a big weak link in this Manchester United team, but he perhaps is the weakest link, I think. And his performance in the first half against Everton last weekend, I would call it one of the worst individual performances I've seen from a player this season. Yeah, if he was a horse running at Cheltenham, I think his jockey would have pulled him up at halfway, because he was absolutely appalling. And the numbers sort of backed up the eye test as well. So his passing accuracy of 75% was the second lowest recorded by any Premier League midfielder that has attempted 70 or more passes in that game this season. That's only Ollie Norwood for Sheffield United against Bournemouth, who conjured up a pathetic 66%, ranked worst of all Premier League midfielders this season. And in that first half, Casemiro's figure was below 70%, which, as I referenced, isn't really surprising for anyone that watched the game, as just pass after pass went astray. And it led to so many Everton breaks, which they didn't have the clinical strikers to take advantage. But Manchester United were just getting away with that in that first half. And I think it was all down to Casemiro's sloppy play in midfield. And of his 70 passes in that match, 17 of them resulted in Manchester United losing possession, 7 of them coming in the first half. And that's an extraordinary figure, to lose possession 17 times as a holding midfielder. And you can sometimes forgive a player for losing possession if they're more of an advanced midfielder, perhaps they're trying to make progressive, riskier passes to help like create chances. But that's not Casemiro's job, is it? He's a holding midfielder and he's tasked with keeping things sort of ticking over rather steadily. And it just seemed to me Dwight McNeil was just running riot in that first half, past Casemiro, past the Manchester United midfield, and creating so many opportunities. So it sort of triggered me to check Casemiro's dribbled past by opponent statistics this season, and the results made me nearly fall off my chair. Honestly, it was absolutely this is staggering. So Casemiro's average of being dribbled past by opponents this season stands at 2.52 per 90 minutes in the Premier League, which is the third highest.
Oh my God!
Of any Premier League player to have played 500 minutes this season, and that is a seriously worrying statistics. And just for context, when you look at players that play in his position, so looking at so-called other elite clubs that United should be challenging with. So Declan Rice's average for the season stands at 0.64 in terms of getting dribbled past. Rodri's is at 0.91. And I just thought I'd throw Virgil van Dijk's in there. He's still been dribbled past once all season. So his per 90 average is 0.08. So Casemiro's 2.52 dribbled past statistics are just absolutely laughable. And I think this is where it starts and ends for Manchester United, what the problem is, I think. And this is why they're facing so much sort of attacks towards their goal, and the shots counts are off the scale, as Mark referenced there. So, and it is a surprise when you're someone that can't pass to a teammate or gets dribbled past at ridiculous rates. It's no surprise what's going on at Manchester United, and Liverpool's intensity in midfield could make this a really embarrassing situation for the Brazilian, I think. And I'm quite nervous for him, facing that intense team, McAllister, Szoboszlai. I mean, they're going to be targeting him and trying to get into that space in behind. And Casemiro has been booked in 7 of his last 13 starts, so he's definitely a runner in the cards market as well. Even though he's probably going to be a short price, maybe around sort of 6-4. So with a one-sided match on the cards, as Mark's outlined there, and I think we are thinking Liverpool are going to take a lot of beating in this one. We need to find a way to back Liverpool. Again, the 1.9 on the Betfair exchange for them to win is a good angle in. But I'm going to sound the Manchester United corner klaxon again, I think, Kev. I think it's time to... There it is. We've got the
That's
klaxons.
That tickled Mark. You like that.
It's been a recurring theme, hasn't it, this season?
Yes.
Especially with my punting. Absolutely. Of attacking the opposition corner count against United with confident stakes as well. So... regular readers and listeners will all know about the sustainable edge we've been exploiting, something that was tipped up here for the Manchester Derby, where City absolutely annihilated their market expectations on the corner line, didn't they? They won 15 when their line was set at 8. So, yeah, Manchester United ship corners like no other team in the Premier League, don't they? So, and the market isn't seeming to react accordingly either, which is always good news. So, the last 10 games in the Premier League, United have... conceded an average of 8.3 corners per 90 minutes. And that was after Everton surpassed their market expected line and won 8 at Old Trafford on Saturday. But that average rises to a completely bonkers 11.5 corners conceded in the last 7 games against the top 5 in the Premier League. I know these are numbers that we've read out before, haven't we, when we were talking about the Manchester City derby. I'm going to do it again because it is pretty funny. So yes. They shipped 10 away at Villa, 13 at home to Spurs, 6 at home to Villa, 12 away at Liverpool, 12 at home to Man City, 12 at Arsenal, and a staggering 15 in that recent game in Man City, 12 of those That's coming amazing. In the first half. So the corner line for Liverpool has to be attacked, I think, again, with Man United likely to defend deep and just try and stay in the game. And they do have a tendency to do that under Ten Hag in these matches. They do stay in these games against the big teams for longer than perhaps the underlying metrics suggest. So I can see Liverpool racking up plenty of corners. They're averaging just under 7 corners per game this season across all competitions. So that's, I think it's 6.9 was the exact figure. And they've won 7 or more corners in 25 of their 44 matches. So that's a 55% strike rate. And just when you factor in the opposition and their woeful record at shipping corners, I think we should be able to get around even money for Liverpool to win 7 or more corners. And that's what I would call a proper naughty price, I think, Kev. So
yes,
we're going to be bold. And also we can be bold and attack the higher lines as well. But yeah, I think Liverpool 7 corners, you can throw in the Liverpool shots, you can throw in the Liverpool win price. You can have real fun on the Bet Builder, I think, with some pro-Liverpool angles.
And finally, trader, tipster, and long-suffering United devotee, Emmett O'Keefe is on the panel. Emmett, Once again, it's a therapy session for you. Did you see anything whatsoever in the Everton win to encourage you, or was it just more of the same bilge and they got away with it?
No, every game is the same. Every game is like Groundhog Day. It's just like this.
An unending nightmare.
An unending nightmare isn't, yeah, like then when I'm watching United now, I have to do something else. I can't just fully focus the game because I get too angry. it annoys me too much. The hope is gone. All there's left is kind of, is the hope is like kind of the variance might go United's way and they somehow might profit from a Villa collapse and kind of vibes their way into the Champions League qualification. But it's realistically looking like kind of a season with very few positives. And as Lewis said,
there were some people screaming at us going, what are they talking about? They're like sixth. They've been in an FA Cup quarter final. You know, it can't be that bad, but it kind of is, because if you look at like expected points models and what have you, they've got United in mid-table. They've got them in the bottom half, haven't they? A lot of those models. Can you outrun XG for?
It sounds very like, I sound very like the entitled big club fan, and I apologise to any, like, I know you described me as a long-suffering fan. Like, for relatively speaking, I'm not really long-suffering at all, like, compared to, I think, most football fans. Yeah.
It's a long fall they've had, really. You know, they've not won the league in ages. You know, it's quite a come down from where they were being the dominant force.
Yeah, and as well, I think for a football fan as well, like people, like it's not binary. It's not about the trophies and necessarily the result, or like the reality is, like, there's only one team can win the league, only one team can win the Champions League. It's hard, very hard to win a trophy. It's hard to even compete for a trophy. It's like the week to week experience as a fan is what matters. Like enjoying the games, feeling like this is a team you could be proud of, or a team you enjoy watching. And it's just like, that's the thing. Week to week, it's torture. Week to week, it's just like we're conceding. In ground, we're gonna, like, it's kind of every, you know, in every match you play, you're gonna lose the shot count, you're gonna like concede a lot of corners, and you're just kind of hoping the kind of rolls the dice don't go your way, or and it could have, you're getting kind of chance set. I don't think the process is absolutely abysmal, and it's kind of, it is concerning. Like, we'll see what happens, but I'm a little bit concerned about the noises that about Ten Hag staying on, because I think it's probably too far gone at this stage. I think like, it for him to rehabilitate his United career will require a total overhaul in his style of play, and kind of, which I think just it is kind of hard to imagine. As Lewis mentioned, I think the Casemiro decline, I think maybe how Casemiro, I think, held things together a lot more last season. I think that's what we've seen this season, that the style of play, I think, this season and last season are relatively similar, but I think just Casemiro was just way better last season, and he could kind of plug a lot of the holes. And for most of last season, he was, I think, one of the best midfielders in the Premiership. And it's quite like the Fabinho precipitous decline for Liverpool, where he went from one of the best defensive midfielders in the Premiership to, like, his athleticism left. And unfortunately in football, like, declines aren't linear. It's not gradual decline. It's a bit like maybe Alexis Sanchez we saw years ago. You can go from being really good to pretty useless in the space of...
Yeah, it was mega quick with Fabinho, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
In a blink of an eye, he went, oh, what's happened there? And he was suddenly, I guess as well, especially when your job is to break up play and your job is to kind of time tackles really well all the time. And if it even slightly goes, then the whole thing unravels mega quick.
Yeah, exactly. It's and much like Liverpool will be reliant on our good friends in Saudi Arabia, hopefully, to bail Man United out of that Casemiro contract. Just on this game, I quote the lads, that I think it's from everything what we've seen this season, it's impossible to see Liverpool not kind of dominating the shot count. Liverpool, like, average more shots per game even than Man City, and I think, like, yeah, I think it's kind of it's an obvious bet. Look at the high shot counts, 24 shots 7-2, 25 shots 9-2. I think Liverpool, unless, I think the only way this bet maybe won't go away is if Liverpool are giving out an absolute hammering, or three or four up with 20 minutes or half an hour to go. They might call off the dogs and make a few substitutions, but like, I think on all evidence we've seen this season, United might be competitive on the scoreline, but in terms of the process, it's hard not to see Liverpool racking up bags of shots and corners.
Well, Man United fans will be really enthused by the last 15 minutes there. Injury time goals, as we know, can be a pain in the pocket if they ruin your bet, but now you've got 90-minute payout to rescue you. If the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands, your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description. 18+. BeGambleAware.org. Elsewhere, Chelsea taking on Championship side Leicester in the quarterfinals. Lewis, Leicester obviously have their eyes on promotion. Chelsea, I cannot work out. I thought they had some great individual performances on Monday against Newcastle. But as a team, the structure is still all over the shop.
It is to a certain extent. I do think he's starting to get something right in forward areas, actually, Pochettino. And I think it revolves around the development and the quality of Marlo Gusto, actually, at the right wing back.
He was
right
super
back
on Monday. Yeah, he was excellent.
He's been excellent for at least a month now, and he's becoming sort of the playmaker, really, from right back for Chelsea. And for all the criticism they've had in the transfer market, I think one of the shrewdest bits of business in the summer was to get him for just 26 million. And this is now and again, if you throw enough SHIT at the wall, something is going to stick eventually, isn't it? So that they might have got this one right with Gusto, I think. And to be a top class fullback in the modern day, you need to have that sort of creative nous and be a force in the final third, don't you? And Gusto's definitely providing that, I think. And I suppose the biggest compliment you can pay him is the fact that no one's talking about Reece James for Chelsea. Reece James is arguably one of the best right backs in the world, what went on song. And he's not really been missed because Gusto's slotted in there and offered so much down that side. And he does act as sort of a playmaker, doesn't he, in this Chelsea team? A bit like Alexander Arnold does at Liverpool, the way that Cancelo used to do at Man City. I think it's a very important position for these top teams to have a fullback that can step in to that sort of creative area of the pitch and provide for the strikers. So, and I think they found consistency, actually, in the phases of their attacking play. And Gusto is at the heart of those attacks. So just ran some numbers, actually. And he's, in the last month, Gusto is averaging 93 touches per 90 minutes, and that's the 15th highest of any player in the Premier League. And no Chelsea player is having more touches of the ball. So he's having more touches than the likes of Fernandes and Caicedo. And that just shows how much they're sort of building their attacks down that right-hand side. And he's averaging the most touches of any player inside the final third two for Chelsea at 19 touches per 90 minutes. So again, he's showcasing that he's given such a license in this system to get down that right hand side. And I think Pochettino's found quite a good balance in that regard, because he goes with a more defensive minded left sided defender, I think. So it's Cucurella against Newcastle, who didn't really get forward much, and he just gives you a bit more protection down the left. Colwill played there against Brentford. And it's triggering sort of an obvious ploy of playing down that right-hand side, I think. And you can sort of see that through their direction of play stats. So 45% of their attacks came down the right versus Newcastle. 39% of their attacks came down the right against Brentford. 47% against Man City and 50% against Palace. So definitely the plan is to get the ball out to him to create and link up with Cole Palmer, who looks very comfortable playing with him, I think. And I think he enjoys playing with a player like Gusto, who can find him in those sort of dangerous pockets. Yeah. And Nicholas Jackson, you can see when Gusto gets the ball into a crossing position, Jackson sort of comes alive in the middle. And they actually linked up for a goal at Brentford, didn't they? Gusto provided the cross and Jackson headed it in. And I think that could be a combination which could be quite deadly, actually, over the next sort of few weeks. Because Jackson is a very good finisher when he hasn't got time to think about it, when the ball comes in the box, and he is very good at attacking it. So, and I think Chelsea are actually quite a trustworthy team at the moment, just looking at their attacking data. And in their last sort of 8 Premier League games, they've scored 2.1 goals per game, and they've outperformed their XG by about 0.47 per game, which is obviously a complete flip to where they were earlier in the season between August and January, where they regularly sort of underperform their XG. So something's just going right for them in the final third. And I do think it is to do with Gusto and that Palmer link up down that right hand side. And they're meeting the Leicester team here, who are in a very sort of strange spot for this game, aren't they? It's an FA Cup quarter final, and I'll sort of bite your hand off to see QPR ever make an FA Cup quarter final. But is this a game Leicester really need? And because they are wobbling in the league, aren't they? I think they've won just one of their last 5 and conceded 2 goals in 4 of those matches. So they are having a little bit of a wobble, and they're looking over their shoulder now with Ipswich and Leeds sort of putting the pressure on them. So I'm not sure if this is a helpful game for them. It's come at quite a quite a annoying time for them, I'd say. So I think the way to play this would be to bank on that Chelsea right-hand side to deliver the goods and send Chelsea to victory. So Gusto has registered 2 assists. One of those was for that Jackson goal in his last 4 matches. And I just think he's bound to create lots of openings for his teammates in this game, linking up with Palmer, linking up with Sterling if he plays. So, yeah, I really like the price, actually, that Betfair are dangling here. 9-2 for him to register another assist. And in the game that Chelsea are sort of in to score at least 2 goals, and I think, and they should qualify quite comfortably, I think that's the way to play that 9-2. Yeah, for a player that's got 2 assists in his last 4 and is playing at the forefront of all their attacks, I think that's a really big price.
Yeah, I mean, that seems a very sensible bet, actually. You would expect Chelsea, even though they've been all over the shop at times this season. I looked at that front 3 on Monday. They've actually got quite a lot of goals between them. Cole Palmer, Raheem Sterling, Nicholas Jackson. I know Jackson's had a lot of stick this season, but actually, he's been scoring goals pretty much all campaign.
Yeah, it reminds me of, I think there was a line about Andy Cole years ago. It wasn't the quantity of his misses, it's the quality of the misses. That's sometimes Jackson, the big miss or the kind of the really glaring misses that are in people's mind. I like Jackson too. I think if you're betting on a kind of striker for the next 3 years, the Premier League, I expect him to become a kind of at least a 15 goal a season man. He's actually very, very talented. I think his early season struggles and maybe kind of overdoing some of his kind of descent yellow cards obscured the fact that this is a talented player on the rise. And it's just a kind of it's more been about the fact that obviously Nkunku's been absent, and like in an ideal world, he wouldn't be the main striker of a kind of a Premier League team pushing the top 6. He'd be kind of maybe you'd maybe play him 20 or 30 games a season, yeah. and he wouldn't have such a burden on such a young player. So yeah, Chelsea didn't actually break the bank for him either. So I think Jackson is a player definitely that Chelsea can build with. Palmer's obviously next in form. Lewis obviously mentioned Gusto. I don't love Raheem Sterling. He'd be one of my least favourite players in the league. And I do think that's kind of a position they can kind of improve on. But like, I think Chelsea's attacking output is definitely improving. But I definitely wouldn't trust them defensively, especially playing out from the back. I think De Sassi and Chalobah are vulnerable in that regard. And Chelsea...
Oh, on Monday. Wow. Yeah. There were some heart-in-mouth moments with, especially De Sassi.
He doesn't want the ball. Thiago Silva definitely takes things off the table in terms of his pace and in terms of maybe you could play him, put a 4-gear defensive line to play a bit deeper. But I do think his kind of composure on the ball is missing. And even like Levi Caldwell will be quite good on the ball as well compared to De Sassi and Chalobah. I think maybe some teams wouldn't necessarily try to press high at Stamford Bridge. I think Leicester will. I think Leicester will go after them. And they'll try to play like kind of a good Premier League team. And I just thought, given that like the goal line just looks a little bit low, like both teams to score is trading at 1.8 in the exchange. 67% of Chelsea's games in the Premier League have seen both teams score. And like Chelsea have only kept 1 clean sheet in their last 10. I think if Chelsea win, the likelihood is here it'll be kind of maybe a 2-3-1 or maybe even a 3-2 type of game. And I think Leicester, the joint highest most goals the Championship in this season. I think if they play in the Premier League next week, they'd probably be favourites against all of the bottom 3, I would say. And I think they can definitely cause Chelsea problems.
In the Premier League on Sunday, Villa go to West Ham. Mark, it's a really important game this for Villa because they're suddenly feeling the heat, aren't they, after they were smacked by Tottenham last weekend. We don't know at this stage whether top 4 is enough. We know top 4 is enough for Champions League. We don't know if top 5 is. But West Ham, you never quite know what you're going to get. Both of these teams are going to be in European action on Thursday night. We don't know how they've done, but how do you see this one going?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. West Ham, I'm finding one of the most difficult teams to place at the minute, or to try and second guess them. And they have improved since Paqueta's returned, but they were so sloppy and so underwhelming at home to Burnley last weekend. It's difficult to know what you're going to get from them. And then for Aston Villa, they were poor last weekend for large parts of that game against Spurs. Emery looked to have overthought it, I think, opting to sort of switch formation to a 3 at the back, perhaps to try and get his wing backs high and try and stop Spurs. Spurs' fullbacks doing the same, but I thought Tielemans was really ineffective, and Bailey and Watkins were isolated. They didn't kind of keep the ball in forward areas, really, and Spurs were able to counter-attack and expose that high defensive line. So we need a big improvement from Villa, who did look a little bit leggy after going to Ajax in Europe. McGinn's now suspended. Kamara is injured, so it does weaken them in midfield. So if you're a West Ham player or coach, you surely have to target that central area if you're going to pick up a positive result here. But I suspect they will continue to try and play on the counter-attack here, which is, you know, they're not a possession-heavy or a control type of side. They're very reactive under Moyes, and they have a soft centre of their own, really. I was surprised to see that since the January break, or their own January break, they've conceded multiple goals in 6 of 8 Premier League games. And you look at the calibre of side to have done so against West Ham, Burnley, Brentford, Forest, Blades, they've all scored at least twice against West Ham since that January break. And you know, Villa have also shipped multiple goals in 7 of the last 10 Premier League games. So you can kind of understand why both teams are scoring overs are short enough here. There's obviously a premium on goals-based bets now in the Premier League following the huge hike in goals output. But that's not always reflected in the anytime goal scorer markets. And that's where I'm going to head for here. Ollie Watkins is 7-5, 2.4 to score at any time. And I think that has to be a consideration. He's 22 goals and 34 Villa starts this season, 7 in his last 9. And he's had at least 2 shots on target in 6 of those 9 as well. His away record is really strong as well. 13 goals and 19 away starts, 5 goals in his last 3 away games. And if you look at his Premier League only record, he's averaging 0.58 goals per 90 and 0.52 expected goals per 90, excluding penalties, which is really exceptional numbers, really. So, yeah, I'm very encouraged by those numbers at that price as well, considering West Ham are conceding the second most shots in the Premier League at home this season, and they're conceding 1.65 expected goals at home in the Premier League too. So I suspect Villa will score. I suspect it will be high scoring. And if it is, I think Watkins could contribute.
And finally, let's take it to Serie A, Juventus against Genoa. Emmett, a few weeks ago, Juventus were pushing for the title. It was going to be between them and Inter. Inter have just streaked away. I know they went out of Europe this week very narrowly, but in Serie A, they've been flawless. Juventus just fallen apart completely.
They have, but one player hasn't fallen apart is Dusan Vlahovic. I think he's like, he could have, last season, maybe people were wondering, was this the prince that was promised? Was he going to be worth the kind of transfer fee that Juventus, Juventus paid for him in the second half of the season? He's really kind of shown his best form. He's 9 goals in his last 8 starts. And I watched actually one of the games he didn't score against Napoli recently. He had a hatful of chances, which he missed. But I think in terms of goal score backers, it's still a kind of a good sign that he meant to kind of great positions he was getting in. In a match, the Juventus are kind of 1-2 favourites against Genoa, and should at least manage a couple of goals. I think he looks a little bit of value at 5-4 to score, and he's managed to notch up a couple of braces in the last couple of months. So I'll definitely have a look at the bigger price him to score 2+ as well.
Yeah, sounds good to me. That's all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Remember, all of our shows are on Betfair's new YouTube channel for non-racing content. So make sure you like and subscribe. Lots of good preview content as well on our website, betting.betfair.com. From Emmett, from Lewis, from Mark, and from me, it's goodbye for now.